Welcome to the In the Limelight podcast. I'm your host, Clarissa Burt, and every week I bring you great information from fabulous people that I get to meet all over the world. I interview public figures, influencers, entrepreneurs, thought leaders, millionaires, and moguls that share their know-how, tipping points, pivotal moments, and life lessons. I promise you educative, empowering, and entertaining conversations with entrepreneurs that have a social conscience. Don't forget to find me on social. You can find me pretty much everywhere. Facebook, it's Clarissa Burt Official. Also, sign up for my newsletter at clarissaburt.com. That way you can keep abreast of the In the Limelight media as it's coming out. And you'll be getting my weekly newsletter along with the In the Limelight magazine every quarter. Check out inthelimelightmedia.com. Hey, everybody, it's Clarissa. You are back in the limelight, and yet another extraordinary entrepreneur. Today we're talking about the arts, but wait until you hear what we're going to be talking about. It is something nothing short of extraordinary. I do want to remind you, though, that you need to go and like and share and comment and let us know how we're doing here at the In the Limelight. You know that we speak to entrepreneurs and we talk about intelligent media for the savvy entrepreneur. You are going to see this video on YouTube. You're going to hear the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. And then don't forget that we've got our digital magazine. This is just a copy for you to see, but the digital magazine, you can find everything at inthelimelightmedia.com. Well, today, as I promised, another extraordinary lady who is a friend of mine, lives in Los Angeles, but is of Italian extraction. She was born in Tuscany and comes from a long dynasty of people that were very important in entertainment in some way, shape, or form. Her grandfather was the owner of, I think, the family as well. She'll tell us when she comes on, the owner of a very famous theater in Florence. And she today is doing, and you know how I talk about the importance of speaking to social causes and entrepreneurs with a social conscience. And if there's anybody in the world that I know that does that, it's this beautiful lady right here. Valentina Castellani is on the show. Welcome to you.
Welcome, Clarissa. Such a pleasure to see you again. Thank God for modern technology.
Yeah, I know, right? Thanks for that. So I know that you're coming to us from Malibu, California. We are still going through COVID, so we have to say that. And you were telling me that it's beautiful to see from your house the beaches, but people really are not going there. So that's good to know. Let's jump right in. I want to know just a few words about your family, the history, how you as a child were, you know, sort of brought into this fabulous world of everything arts and entertainment. I'm assuming starting with your grandfather?
Yes, absolutely. It actually starts way before, from my great-grandfather, which I have met. He was already dead when I died, unfortunately. But my grandfather was the president of Anicagis, which is the international European distribution. He was a producer and financed many of the golden era films, including some of the Fellini films, etc., etc. And it was the owner of the beautiful, iconic Teatro Verdi, which is like La Scala, but in Florence, and many others, still in Florence and some in Rome. So obviously, I come from a legacy that is so connected to cinema and to theater, ballet, opera, plays. And I had a golden childhood being exposed to so much. I remember spending afternoons after doing homeworks, just waiting either for my mother or my grandfather in the movies, watching whatsoever film, play, So very, very
Blessed. So did you know then that this was going to be your path?
I didn't know at all, but I was always a very creative child. I was put in an art institute since I was 13. Actually, I was a year and a half in advance in school, and I used to paint. I have a master's degree in painting, design, and fine arts, actually.
Right.
It just came a little bit later. Obviously, it fell into my pockets because of my grandfather and the movie industry a little bit. I did some acting, more for fun than anything else. And then later on, definitely also with Francesco Quinn, which was my life partner, it became a very strong call. And when he died about 9 years ago now, it was our dream to open a production studio, and right. I did it in his memory and to keep the legacy alive. And I've been blessed to collect many successes and film of great content. Yes.
Right. So let's fast forward, because we've got a lot to get to in a short amount of time. So the childhood, it was sort of set. You kind of knew, but let's just say you had all of the presupposti, if you will. You had all of the possibilities, no, given your background and your family. Fast forward to now, you decide you want to become a film producer yourself. I'm assuming that started when you were here in the United States for the first time. And so, but you're not going to be just producing any film, because you are out in Hollywood, let's say that. And there's all kinds of film scripts going around. I mean, you have the choice, right, of what you can, what you can actually start to work on and produce. I find that most producers usually don't produce anything that they don't fall madly in love with. And I know you well enough to know that any kind of film wasn't going to do. You needed something that had a social, conscience to it. It had a social message to it. So why did you decide to go down that path? What was so important for you as a producer to say, no, all of the other things, I'm going down a path where I can leave a very strong message?
That's a very good question, Clarissa. You know, I always believe in the famous Harry Potter philosophy. It is the wand that chooses the magicians and never the opposite.
That's great. I love that. That's perfect. Yeah.
Obviously was in my past. Yes. To be, I always have been, as an artist, an observer of life, of people, a lover of people, a lover of life. And cinema was another media that allowed me to do that, but in a much bigger universal platform. And my call to the social part of it came right after we co-produced the film, The Butterfly's Dream, which was the 2014 entry to the Oscar as a foreign film. And it had a very big social part. It was a Turkish film. And after that, this young director approached me and he asked me, could you produce this film I want to do about the Temple Mountain? And I felt very hesitant, Clarissa, because not being Israeli nor Palestinian, I felt like, what kind of voice can I have, truthful voice into it?
Right. Right.
And I thought about it, and you know, I always say that my best and biggest goal in life were achieved in a state of tremendous uncomfortability. And the subject of the Temple Mountain, the peace in the Middle East, was tremendously uncomfortable for me because, as much as we read in the news, how much can we know about it unless we've been born in it, grew up in it? Yes, I learned and started a long journey with this film that brought me to meet the Pope, Pope Francis, and Shimon Peres, Mahmoud Abbas, the Dalai Lama, and so much more. And obviously, it was a great amount of study behind the scenes and diplomatic, and learn how to navigate in a diplomatic world. Because in the end, we brought the film to the U.S. Congress and got an award from U.S. Congress.
That's amazing. So amazing. I loved when I read that.
And so much more. So at that point, the call was very defined. And while we were filming that film, actually, we had a beautiful interview with Ambassador James Woolsey in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Ambassador Woolsey was the founder of the U.S. Energy Security Council, which is that government organization created to diminish our dependency from oil. And while we were interviewing him, actually, to talk about the peace in the Middle East, because he's an amazing politician and strategist and a person of great knowledge,
right,
it came clear to myself and the director, Heiser Kurz, that the oil part and what we were discussing was another film by itself.
Yeah, of course.
So we're like, yes, we would like to film, to do a documentary film about oil and what it brings about. But again, I never interested into doing a documentary simply political. So I was looking for my connection to the people, which is always where my heart resides.
Sure.
And when the saga of Standing Rocks and the Native Americans came on the news, I felt like blink, a little light popped into my brain. And I was like, that's it. Let's go to Standing Rock and let's start it from there by having the Native American, this micro example of society, narrate this journey through, you know, the pollution of the water, of their sacred waters, and on and on. And it became an amazing story that we're still filming and telling.
So was there any difficulty in the pre-production work and getting in touch with or having them accepting you as being the one that could best tell the story?
You know, it's definitely based on trust. There is no name, no title, no legacy that would matter to the Native Americans. Sure. And the way I decided to approach it is like, let's just go to Standing Rock. And I shouldn't say it, but I went without permits to film because I knew at the time when the turmoil was going on that if I would ask the permits, I would be monitoring what to film. And instead, I wanted to have a very genuine approach to this special skirt of society, which are the Native Americans, which many people think they are extinguished. Even in Europe, there is something about the Buffalo Bill time. And instead, they are well and alive and in their reservation and dramatically need our attention and care.
Right.
And, by starting to film in the camp, it was a teepee camp in the middle of nowhere, 2 hours away from any civilization where no internet works, no phone, nothing works.
Yeah. Wow.
On top of that is minus 20 degrees. So it was very difficult filming. However, my first thought, I saw a video of this chief, which is the kind of the pope of the Native American tribe, and that's Chief Arvol Looking Horse speaking at United Nations about this matter, the oil and the pollution of their sacred water. And I was very convinced to want to approach him. And yet it's like almost, okay, yeah, right. How are you going to find it? But when I have an idea and an instinct, it's difficult to stop me.
You manifested it.
For the Pope.
You manifested that for sure.
Yes. So I found a little kid that was providing water and food to the different teepees in the camps, and he was a lovely Native American kid, and I started to talk to him, and he's like, I need to find a Chief Arvol. It's like, I don't even know where it is. It's 2,000 teepees and a storm is coming, so we're moving the elders in another place because he's not frozen at night.
Wow.
And finally, after 5 days, he gives me the cell phone of the wife of the chief. And yet he tells me, of course, it's not going to work because there is no internet. But I always believe in the universe. And I felt that if I arrived in there, there was a meaning. And I kept leaving messages for this wife and the chief on their phone, on their voicemail. At the 7th days that we were filming, they finally answer. And they tell me, oh, it's fantastic, Valentina. Unfortunately, we're not there anymore. We're 6 hours away and we're going to take a plane to move to Canada because the chief has to do some ceremonies out there.
Yeah.
So I felt, oh, my God. Yet I felt like it's not finished. Let me stay another day filming in the camp. Well, the day after to finish the story, the wife called me and she tells me shockingly, it is so strange. It's the first time we lose a plane. And the chief interpreted this as a sign that he has to meet you. So if you're willing to drive 6 hours, we will be waiting for you out here. And that's how my friendship and communication with this amazing human being started. And I was so honored.
What a story that is.
Yes.
That's a story. And a story that's almost a movie in the movie.
Yes, yes.
That's incredible.
Many times the background, how we get to this people and the making of this documentary is a film by itself.
Yeah, this for sure, with no internet, no computers, no cell phones. And then, you know, a missing of the plane, obviously, was the simple solution to something like that and driving 6 hours. Yeah. What is it that that you as a producer, first of all, I'm assuming that in the kind of situations and conditions and films that you decide to do, you have to be extremely emotionally invested.
Yes.
Okay. How do you objectively tell the story so that at the end of the 2 hours, you let someone else make up their mind and they're not, you know, do you understand? Like not following what you're projecting.
Very good question. I think as a storyteller, as a filmmaker, and especially a documentary maker, we have to learn right away to be the observers. And our emotion has to be directed to observing and respecting what's going on.
Yeah.
And as a storyteller next to an observer is that a film in one way is there to inspire hope or reflection. So these two ingredients are essential for good filmmaking, at least for me. One side is the observer that has to leave reality unfold, and the other one is the storyteller that in some way, at least for myself, it has to inspire reflection, if not hope.
So do you go into the editing room, Valentina? I mean, are you involved in that process as well, or do you trust that once you've handed that over, someone else can tie the bow on it for you?
Well, definitely we always choose a very good editor. In this case, is Alan Jakubowicz that has been working on my past documentary. And I think there are amazing editors, and to have a good editors on board, it means everything. An editor can understand and filter the story. And very important, it gives a rhythm to a film that a director or a producer itself cannot find and build together.
Right.
At the same time, yes, I am very involved in the editing process also, because these are reality that are not scripted, Clarissa. Yeah. So it's not like we give the script, the acting scene to the editor, which knows how it needs to unfold, and we know the ending.
Right.
Here, we are catching pieces and glimpses of life. And by keeping in mind the goal and the message of the documentary, they need to be put together as a puzzle. So it is very important that for us who were the first witness of the story while filming are there, whether it's me, the director, or us together with the editor to really kind of get the shape together. And then, of course, I am a believer that each artist should be left a bit alone and free to express. And so I really do trust the editor in the end that, okay, this is the message. This is what we witnessed. This is the energy that we want to convey.
Right.
Go alone and do your job and do it in peace. You know, I think it's very important.
What kind of advice would you give to aspiring producer? You know, production has a lot of moving parts. There are a lot of different things that need to be pulled together into one beautiful final opera, if we will. And so what is it that you could tell aspiring producers about how to find financing for the film?
Well, financing is definitely an important part and a difficult part that is always different. There isn't a formula where, you know, it's like go in there and find the money. It's not like you're going to the bank. Each project has a personality and a story and a different interest and placement in society, in the movie industry. So it's not just one story. Some of my project came just funded and some other needed to be found. The funding needed to be found. I think in terms of choosing what to produce or what to shoot, first of all, be connected with your heart to the subject or the message of the film. Very, very important. And start from a different point of view. It is always a once upon a time, but that once upon a time starts from different point of view. Don't start always from the same exact matter, just like I am starting a story of oil from the Native Americans, you know, to get them to Washington, D.C. I always like that kind of way, you know, start from the background, because that way is the way we live our life. We don't know how the story unfolds of our life. We kind of guess, we kind of want, but we are walking through it. So by adopting this system, the film kind of becomes more human to my eyes, you know, because it's, it's lived from within rather than a story that is there, placed. Yeah. It goes that way. Why? Tell me why, you know. Right. So I'm interested into seeing the project unfolding from a different point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
These are definitely passion projects for you, no doubt. So if somebody wanted to see The White Snake, Valentina, where would they go to see it?
Well, it's still filming, so it's not finished. And right now, obviously, we are all at home. Also, the Native American in the reservations are in quarantine, so we are waiting to start filming again. Okay. And we are filming with the Six Nations Reservation in Canada, and also in North and South Dakota with several tribes. Mm-hmm. And but you can watch and read, more than anything, some of the material and about this documentary in our website, www.queenstudiosentertainment.com.
Right. Ooh, let's put that up. Let me do that. Yep. We got so enthralled in your, there we are. There it is, everybody. Queenstudiosentertainment.com. Okay. More information is there.
Yes. So there's a lot of material in there where you can see our journey and the way we are filming, and the rest that you will see soon in cinemas, and so much more.
Fantastic. Yeah. Ah, that's so exciting. So if someone wanted to get in touch with you as well, they can find you on your website?
Definitely, yes.
Okay, fantastic.
Of course, Valentina Castellani.
I cannot wait to see this movie. I want to be one of the first ones to know when it's ready so that I can come to the premiere.
Thank you, Clarissa.
I will definitely come out and see it. It's going to be an amazing, I mean, just like everything else that you do and everything else that you are, an amazing woman with amazing head, with amazing thoughts, and certainly a beautiful heart. So thanks for being on the show with us today, Valentina. I really appreciate your time.
It was a pleasure, Clarissa, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Talk soon. Bye.
Ciao, ciao.
Are you looking for a place with positive information? Well, look no more. This is the place, InspiredNewsRadio.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, positive talk radio. Shows designed to inspire, inform, educate, and motivate. Hi, I'm Scott Sullivan, and I'm one of the hosts right here on InspiredNewsRadio.com. And I ask you to please tune in every single week to my show, Mind Your Own Business. InspiredNewsRadio.com, the place to be for positive talk.
Hey everybody, it's Clarissa, and if you know me, you know I love to travel. I'm always on a plane, a train, or a car, and I love discovering new places, new hotels, new resorts, you know, just new adventures. That's why I'm so thrilled to offer to you a membership to the Clarissa Travel Club. Yep, it's at no expense to you, but it's travel at a massive discount. Here's the deal. It's savings up to 70%. No travel restrictions, no blackout dates. Almost any hotel in the world. There are over a million hotels, everybody, that you can go and search on ClarissaTravelClub.com. It's free to join. Works for friends and family, so have everybody else sign up too. It's a user-friendly site, I have to say, and here's the clincher. It's 110% price guarantee if you find a cheaper price. Let me say that again. 110% price guarantee if you find a cheaper price within 24 hours of departure date. So sign up now and receive instant access to incredible savings and terrific offers. It's just that easy. I lived in Italy for 30 years and I love Italian food, but Italian food didn't really love me because a lot of it had gluten in it. I didn't understand why I was getting so sick all the time and why I was having reactions and rashes and just generally not feeling well after eating. I myself am a celiac and I found out the hard way. An internationally renowned chef, Rita Romano, and I have created an Italian gluten-free gastronomy cookbook that is made just for you. If you have celiac disease, gluten intolerance, or even if you don't, you are gonna love this book. book, Satisfy Your Passion for Italian Food Without Gluten. The book has 70 delicious, authentic, and modern recipes, each with beautiful illustrations and many photographs taken in Italy. Cook up a meal that family and friends can enjoy. There's bruschetta and pasta, soups, risotto, focaccia, and scrumptious desserts. Italian Gluten-Free Gastronomy also includes a variety of vegetarian and vegan recipes. An 8.5 by 10 inch hardcover with a beautiful dust jacket, you can get that at clarissabert.shop and click under Feel Good. And for the digital version, you can find it on Amazon.
Okay, everybody, that's it for this episode. I would love it if you'd go like, subscribe, and share. Let everybody know how much great information you've gotten here today. And follow me on social. You can find me pretty much anywhere under Clarissa Burt, and on Facebook it is Clarissa Burt Official. Go to InTheLimelightMedia.com where you can sign up for my newsletter to get all kinds of great information. It's a monthly newsletter. And you can also read the In the Limelight digital magazine. It is a quarterly, so that you can keep abreast of all of the people I get to meet and greet and interview. We've got great articles there, all kinds of resources for the savvy entrepreneur that you are. See you next time.